Coming up on Boston Public Radio, it was Snowmageddon 2014. We'll talk to the guy who runs the buses and trains, one who runs the supermarket, one who runs the state, and one who knows what birds do in a storm. Then Callie Crossley joins us to talk light bulbs, unemployment benefits, and a Southerner's reaction to snow. Then it's your turn. How are you dealing with all this? Have you bought enough bread to make French toast for all of South Boston?
Emily Rooney joins us with her world-famous list of observations. Plus, she'll weigh in on whether longtime Red Sox broadcaster Jerry Remy, whose son allegedly stabbed his girlfriend to death, should return to Nesson. Then our weekly news quiz featuring two Boston guys who gave up their parking spaces today just for us. Peter Galzinas from the Boston Herald and Dave Wedge, who's now shoveling his way out in Dorchester. All that coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Hi, Jim.
So which do you prefer, the term snowpocalypse or Snowmageddon? Which is your preferred term for what?
I kind of like Snowmageddon.
So do I. Actually,
good.
So do I.
Snowmageddon. It's a good one.
We're going to talk to a bunch of people who are playing a major role in what happened over the last couple of days, and I guess what will continue to happen over the next day or so. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Governor Patrick, but first, joining us on the phone is his Secretary of Transportation, the guy in charge of trains, buses, roads, all such things in Massachusetts. Secretary Rich Davey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jim Marger. Appreciate you having me on, as usual.
Thanks for being here, Rich. We just heard your guy, Joe Pescatore, talking about the state of affairs. But the roads look pretty clear when we look out the windows, but it's had to have been a tough night for the trains, buses, T, et cetera.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, no surprise, the red line 40-year-old cars, the commuter rail 40-plus-year-old cars were the ones that took the biggest hit this morning. The blue, green, and orange had some minor challenges as well, but, you know, things are back to generally normal. There's still some issues out there that we're going to continue to grapple with over the next couple of days, for sure.
Did I hear that you ran trains virtually all night long to ensure, what, that the tracks were clear and that the as many things were working as possible? Did I dream that or did I hear that?
You both dreamed it and heard it, to be honest.
Jim dreams about the red line.
He loves trains, exactly. So, no, it's pretty typical for a big snowstorm that we run subway trains all night. So it's literally like service is running, except we're not carrying anyone. On the commuter rail, we actually don't run the trains, but we don't turn them, we don't shut them off. So they actually literally are, you know, idling for a few hours. And the reason because of that is we're worried that the pipes will freeze, et cetera, on the locomotive. So, yes, we definitely took precautions and took some other steps last night to make sure we at least were running service today.
Secretary of Transportation Rich Davey, I don't know much about locomotives. The water pipes?
Yes, you
on the,
do.
I don't. The water pipes on the locomotives? Is that what you're worried about freezing?
That's exactly right. So when the ambient temperature gets to a certain level, the water literally dumps so it doesn't freeze in the pipes, and the water is there to keep the engine from overheating. So, you know, it's the same principle, I suppose, in a car, except we don't have antifreeze in our locomotive. So
why not?
I don't know, to be honest. 40-year-old locomotives, it's a different engine, I assume, but if I say anything else, someone will call and say that I'm I don't know what I'm talking about.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe you should put a little antifreeze in there, Rich.
Yeah, so, Rich, they probably really wouldn't run.
I mean, the good news, I assume, is most people took Governor Patrick's warning from last night seriously. Virtually, I mean, this is almost a ghost town, Eastern Mass and I guess New Hampshire, pretty much ghost communities. But what's the end of the day looking like for those who did go to work? Or is most of the T going to be back in shape? The roads do look pretty clear. What are we going to face at the end of the day?
Yeah, so we should be in good shape. I mean, the roads are in good shape. I want to get back to that in just a second. And the T is in relatively good shape as well. Obviously, check the MBTA's website to see. Right now, there are a couple of minor delays in the orange and red line. The blue and green are pretty clear. Commuter rail, with a couple of exceptions, is pretty clear. So, you know, the temperature, obviously, is going to be, I think, pretty stable over the next few hours. You should be able to get home, no problem on the T. The roads, however, I want to talk about quickly, and that is, you know, salt in particular is not very effective once the pavement temperature is at or below zero.
Yeah.
So folks may be tempted, you know, even if you see clear pavement tonight, you know, today into tonight, please drive carefully, because it does not necessarily mean there isn't black ice, or in instances where there's snowpack on some secondary roads and local roads, that it's still not treacherous. So please, if you're out and about today, tonight, take your time, really.
We're talking with Rich Davey, the Mass Department of Transportation Secretary. Rich, I assume you've been out to that bunker that we always hear you guys talking about when you had the press conferences with the governor, right?
I can neither confirm nor deny that. No, no, I am out there, yes.
So,
not now, but I do. I'm out there from time to time.
So what's that like? Is it like above ground, underground? Do they bring in pizzas? I mean, what's the deal out there at the bunker?
It's amazing that the pizza guys always are essential employees.
They really are.
Always delivering.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of odd. You should go out there.
I should.
It's an old world, you know, Cold War bunker that was built in the 1960s that they've, you know, originally a bomb shelter, I think, that has now been converted into MEMA's headquarters. So it's both above and below ground. There's this enormous, like, blast door. And there's actually a letter from President Kennedy just before he was assassinated when it opened. It opened in, I think, November of 1963 on the wall. Literally, he couldn't be there. It was a couple days before his death. So it's sort of interesting, I guess, piece of history that's been converted now to good use, which is, you know, and there are a couple hundred folks there, from the National Guard to weather folks to, you know, transportation officials who were there really coordinating across the state. It's a pretty good sight to see, actually.
Okay, I actually knew you were there because I saw you there yesterday, and I wouldn't have had the courage to ask this question had Marjorie not asked about pizza, Rich Davey, but I figure all bets are off now. Now, at the midday press conference, and I also think it's 6:15, I looked at you, and when you took the podium at the request of the governor, you were wearing, I believe, it looked like you had a T-shirt on and some sort of vest. And what I want to know, you can describe the attire, and I mean this seriously. Before you dress down for an event like this, I'm serious. This is not a joke question. Does someone on your staff have to call and clear this with the governor, or does the governor say it's okay to dress cash because that, you know, it's sort of the Dukakis sweater effect thing? How does that? I'm serious. How does that come about?
I get a memo from the governor every morning. This is, no, I'm kidding. No. I mean, certainly it depends on your role and where you're going to be. I mean, I'm out and about, so. Wearing a suit is a little silly. Although I have to say, I'm not necessarily driving a snowplow either. They wouldn't let me do that. But in all seriousness, no, it's whatever can get you through, whatever your responsibility is.
No, but wait a second.
Sure.
If the governor showed up in one of his beautiful suits and ties, and you showed up in a crummy vest and a T-shirt, you'd have a problem, wouldn't you?
Well, let's just
say
nervous
that may
have happened already. You know, and I'm still around. How's that?
Hey, Rich,
the governor,
one last,
though, he had his MEMA,
he had a little vest, MEMA thing, yeah.
Jacket on.
He had the MEMA vest on.
Yeah. The vest thing. I think that we've moved from the sweaters now. That was
Michael that was Dukakis. I know that.
This is a new era now. Everyone's in their vests.
Do you have is yours a transportation vest, or is just a – what is it? What is it?
I think I had a bright yellow MassDOT jacket on last night. So even if I wasn't at the podium, I could definitely be seen. So I could wave to my mom.
Hey, Rich, last thing for me, and this may be a local proposition. When I was driving here, I think I was still in Cambridge before I entered Brighton on the way to work this morning. And I've seen this before. There are a bunch of snowplows, again, so this may be a local decision, right in a row. And I actually often see it on the turnpike, too. Why is that? Why? And in our former radio life, we would get complaints from people calling saying, why aren't they independently doing something? Why are they following each other? What's the answer? Why are they following each other?
Well, the answer is, you know, they're done in tandem so that if you've got three or four in a row pushing all the snow, it gets to the side of the road, right? If you've got one plow, it's only plowing one lane, pushing more snow into a different lane. One thing that we've done on the turnpike, though, is we bought these big mega plows. I don't know if you've seen these. It's literally a 27-foot-long plow that can plow the pike with that and then just one other plow.
Wait
so
a second. It's 27 feet
plows,
wow.
27 feet wide?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. No, it's we call it our mega plow. No, I mean, we've got about 11 or 12 that we bought a couple of years ago. So we've gone, Jim, from 4 and 5 plows on the pike now down to actually 2 in many instances. We still have 3 or 4 out depending, but we have this enormous plow we bought.
And
of course, it reduces costs. We've got, you know, not 4 drivers, but 2.
So the, wait a second, the 27-foot thing, which I have not seen, is 27 feet as wide, I should know this, as wide as all 3 lanes? Does it cover the whole thing?
Not quite, because then you still have the breakdown lane that we're trying to clear as well on the side. But it's pretty darn close. It's pretty darn close. And it's sort of as a swing. You know what? We'll get you out there the next snowstorm. You'll love it. We won't let you use it, but we will let you see it. How's that?
We would love that, actually.
27-foot wide thing. I always worry about them hitting against the asphalt. That would be awful when
I think that's Rich's
gone.
Worry, not yours.
Yeah.
Hey, Rich Davey, before you go away. So essentially...
he doesn't need me as an assistant, you don't think?
Other than exercising care, everything is pretty much under control. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. I mean, certainly, you know, a couple things beyond transportation. I mean, one is the cold. I mean, you know, folks need to, they see the sun out right now. They're probably thinking it's still, you know, in the teens, in the single digits. It's going to get cold tonight. So keep that in mind. You know, check in with your neighbors. As the governor often says, be careful of, as I mentioned, the road conditions potentially tonight when we get down to below freezing. So those are the things that folks should be continually focused on and concerned about. And look, the bottom line is I think folks, you know, listen to the governor's warnings, which was to stay off the roads. And we were fortunate to. Friday of, you know, the last day of sort of the Christmas holidays, I think a lot of people were staying home anyways. If this was next week, I think this would have been a much bigger challenge for us. But thankfully, Mother Nature was seemingly on our side.
Well, also the horrible cold was a benefit. I mean, as horrible as it feels, it was a benefit because of the weight of the snow, right? That makes your life easier
as well. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. You obviously didn't hear of a lot of power, you know, issues because wires aren't being weighted down by the ice, which is also very good news. I mean, there are still a few communities, particularly on the coast, that aren't quite in the clear yet, you know, still watching the high tides and still watching potential for flooding. But certainly I think the worst of it is behind much of the state. And it's now just, a question of cleaning up and then making sure that, you know, the public is taking their time as they're coming out, you know, over the next 24 to 36 hours. So don't be fooled by the sun. There's still, you know, there's still some treachery out there, particularly with black ice and some other issues like that.
Well, Rich Davey, congratulations on getting at least part of the way through the first big storm in 2014 with no minor catastrophes. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
My pleasure. And Jim, I'll be on at 2 o'clock with the governor. So if you want to comment on my dress, then feel free. I won't say what I'm wearing now, but you'll see in an hour and a half.
We're going to be watching very closely. In the studio. Rich Davey is the Massachusetts Department of Transportation Secretary and Chief Executive Officer. Okay, now we're going from terrestrial terrain to look at some airborne feathered friends by way of Vern Lux. Vern is the senior naturalist at the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket. He writes a weekly birding column for the Cape Cod Times. He's contributed to our sister stations, WCAI and WNAN. Welcome back, Vern.
Hey, Vern.
Well, hey, happy new year to both of you.
And same to you.
I had to chuckle with Rich on there just now because he's talking about the sun breaking out. I'm on Nantucket and we're in vicious whiteout conditions. I can't see 50 feet out the window still. So
really?
Yeah, you can't get off Nantucket today. The boats are canceled. There's no planes. It's very bad down here.
Have you? You still have your power, though, I hope.
We do have power.
That's great. That's great.
I'm sitting here keeping a close eye on the bird feeders. Just like millions of on MassBird, there's a little website, and many people are home today watching and reporting what birds are showing up on their feeders.
Well, Vern, I wanted to ask you, we had a picture in the Boston Herald today of a cardinal sort of perched on a branch. And, of course, you see the little occasional birds right before the storm. But I wonder, with these terrible winds, the whiteout conditions you're talking about in Nantucket and the high winds we've seen around here last night anyway, what do birds do in a storm like this to survive?
Well, I'm delighted that you asked that question. And then people want to know what are the little birds.
Hey, Vern, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hang up on you for 1 second. We're going to call you back literally in seconds to see if we can get a better connection.
Yeah,
so don't go anywhere.
Well, hang on, and I will change. Give me about 2 seconds. I'll change phones and a whole floor of the building here. Okay, bye.
Whoa, oh. Oops. Oh, okay. There he is. He's going to a building. He'll be called in a minute. Vern Lux, who knows more about birds. Lux knows more about birds than anybody who ever lived. That's the question I wanted answered. Where do birds go in a storm? Do you know the answer, or are you just asking?
No, I don't know the answer. I looked up something this morning that talked about how they roll themselves into little balls and their feathers.
Is that really true?
Yeah, and their feathers are very good protectors of their warmth. But I'm not sure. I don't know where the squirrels grow either because they can't burrow into the ground.
But he's not a squirreler.
He's a birder,
well, so we can't ask him that.
On Monday.
But you know what's interesting about that? And he will answer the question. If you're right, based on what your extensive research suggested.
Well, it was not extensive research. It was a quick
morning,
Google search.
Where are the birds? I mean, if they're just rolling themselves into balls and basically waiting out the storm, how come we don't see any?
Because well, some of them have blown away.
Well, where would that be? To where, Marjorie?
They're in Norfolk County. They're in Northampton. Well, when we get Vern back, we're going to ask him that because I think sometimes they do blow away in these high winds, like in hurricanes.
Is that really so?
Yeah. Well, I think so. I mean, it's very upsetting. I mean, do they get separated from the babies? They can't ride it out in the nest, can they?
I really, as you know, I'm not exactly a bird expert, even though we are going birding with Vern in the spring. Vern Lux is back with us. Vern, welcome back. Well, you didn't
really
go anywhere. So what's the answer to Marjorie's question? Where do these birds go in a blizzard?
Well, birds, when you're looking out at these little, you look at these incredibly small, fragile, seemingly fragile creatures, birds have all kinds of adaptations to survive this cold. First of all, they're covered in feathers. Feathers are the most terrific insulating material ever known. It's better than anything we can make synthetically. They're incredibly adaptive. Most birds that spend the winter here undergo a molt in the fall, and they actually grow more and new body feathers to put on their extra winter insulation. They
Wow.
also put on a blubber layer, if you will. They try to accumulate fat, which is if the birds did not put enough fat on this fall. See, right now they're actually probably not taking in enough calories to make up what they're losing, so they're actually getting skinnier during storms like this. It's quite fascinating.
So they basically you're saying there's a preparatory thing that they do in anticipation of this. So they do the
That's
preparation,
correct.
Hopefully, and then the storm comes.
Where do they go?
Where do they go?
I mean, are they on the ground? Are they in the trees?
During the day because their body temperature. Birds are, their metabolism is much higher than ours. Most of the land birds around here, the passeriforms, the birds with perching feet, they have three toes forward and one back, average body temperature is 105 degrees, which would be a severe fever and kill most humans. That's their normal temperature that they're running at. So they have to take in even more, more calories. They have tremendous insulation, but they lose heat through their soft parts, which a soft part on a bird are their beaks, their legs, and there's a bare skin of ring around their eye called an orbital ring. So at night, when birds go to sleep, and let's tell what what's your favorite bird?
Well, I don't know that many birds, so if I said something like a robin, would I be embarrassing myself?
No, but they won't be at the bird feeders. But there are plenty of robins spending the winter around here, surviving on berries and fruits. Well, at night, a robin is going to go to roost in a very dense evergreen tree, probably a red, most of the time they love red cedars, these junipers. And they actually go in big flocks. There's sometimes on the Cape I've seen flocks of 70 and 80,000 robins coming to roost.
Wow.
And they all pack in right into these really dense, almost impenetrable red cedars. The birds get in there and they wiggle their way right in next to the trunk where they huddle. Sometimes they'll huddle together in a group. And if a predator, say a cat or a weasel, something comes up during the night, they can feel the vibration coming up because whatever the predator is going to disturb the branches, and it'll alert the birds and they'll fly to another place.
Now, Marjorie said before you got on, she'd done some independent research this morning, Vern
uh-huh.
Lux, in anticipation. Well, we didn't know if you were going to come, and you finally confirmed. Do some birds get blown away? I mean, these little birds, do they get blown away when weather is like it is, for example, where you are in Nantucket now?
They do in the spring and the fall during times of migration. They don't get blown away, but they get carried further than they wanted to go on prevailing winds. Hmm. Right now, in early January, all the birds that are here are where they want to be. They're not migrating, so no. They're staying put. They have a date. They have a routine that has gotten them this far, and they're sticking to it. And hopefully, the weather won't be too bad and freeze them out. The snow cover really hurts them.
So we should put bird food in the bird feeders.
Right. If you started feeding birds in the fall or even recently, don't stop now. That would be a very cruel trick. The birds have learned that that food source is dependent. It's dependable. It's there. And it needs to be accessible. So, like, this morning I got up and it was still dark, and I'm out there shoveling snow and cracking the ice, you know, getting the feeders. And the birds are they're almost feeding out of my hand today. It's wild out there.
Okay, Vern, thank you. I feel better now about
so
the
do
birds
I actually,
than
Vern.
I did before.
Well, you know, like in eastern bluebirds or chickadees, a lot of these things they'll pig pile into a box or a natural cavity at night. I've seen as many as 13 bluebirds go into one box.
Oh, I'd love to see that,
actually. They pig pile in it, and it keeps them warm at night. It's a little dangerous when they crowd into something that, because the ones on the bottom might actually suffocate.
Some of my friends did that last night, Vernon, actually, and they came out, from what I understand, quite well, and they had a good night, too.
That's a very good night.
It's a 13 bluebird night, you know? You guys want to go. When they sleep, they also turn their head around and stick their beak into either their shoulder or their back.
I've seen that.
And that enables them to breathe warm air that's trapped in their feathers, and so they use less energy that way as well.
That is fascinating. That
is great. There's lots of adaptations. Don't feel bad, but if you're feeding them, please continue to do it.
Okay.
And fresh water, actually, a heated bird bath is a thing of beauty when it gets this cold. Birds are so weight sensitive because of their flight that water is even as more important than food to them sometimes. They really need to drink before they go to bed.
Vern Lox, you were great as always. Thanks so much for answering our questions.
Thank you very much, Vern.
Oh, my pleasure. And
see
we'll
you soon.
Look forward to getting you out in the field.
We're
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it too.
All right.
Vern Lox is the senior naturalist for the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket. He writes a weekly birding column for the Cape Cod Times, and he's a contributor to our sister stations, WCAI and WNAN.
So part of this eclectic mix, we're going to speak to the governor later. We spoke to the Secretary of Transportation, Vern Lox, who is the premier birder in Massachusetts. Now in our final storm roundup, what happens the minute the word nor'easter is spoken? Panic in the aisles. Yesterday, someone uploaded a photo. You saw it, Marjorie, in Universal
Hub.
Yes, I did. Shows an empty shelf at Whole Foods, and the caption reads, "Not just runs on milk, bread, and eggs. Whole Foods is totally out of organic bagged carrots, too." Joining us on the line to go over how grocery stores prepare for the onslaught of crazed customers is Buck Rollins. Buck's the store team leader for South Weymouth's Whole Foods Market. Buck, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Good morning.
Hi, hey. Buck. You know, well, I was surprised because I'm about half a block from the Whole Foods in Brighton, and I was surprised when I went in there right before the storm and saw, you know, you see this all the time at the Star Market and the Shaws, but I saw it in Whole Foods, too, where there was almost no bread and almost no milk, and I was surprised. So you guys get the same onslaught as the big supermarkets do.
Well, yes. Why did that surprise you?
I don't know. I kind of thought the Whole Foods shopper was a little bit more que sera, but I guess I was wrong.
Well, I mean, they love great food in the middle of a storm, just like everybody else. So, yeah, I mean, we definitely get a run. You know, it's tricky, especially with things like you mentioned, perishable items. We have to make sure we've got enough ahead of time, and they don't always have a real long shelf life like in conventional grocery stores. So it's a little tricky. But yeah, we love that excitement before a storm when we can sell everything to all of our customers.
You know, Buck, I want to ask you about that preparation you mentioned a second ago. But when you were mentioning that your customers, like any other customers, like good food and that sort of thing, the point that I think Marjorie was trying to make is when you go to a typical Whole Foods or any other supermarket as a storm is coming, people are buying enough water to float the Titanic. They're buying enough bread to make French toast for all of eastern Massachusetts. Do you laugh privately when you're at your headquarters about this I guess, I don't know how I'd describe it, this over-preparation
Hoarding.
That some people do in great fear, or do you just do what's got to be done?
No, we first of all, we don't have any secret laughs about anything.
Okay, fine.
Headquarters.
Good.
We pride ourselves in our transparency.
No secret laughing.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and I rarely go to headquarters, but no, I mean it is a phenomenon, and we love it. We plan for it. You know, the way we look at it is we're here for the communities that we're in. So when it's a storm, people want to get to the grocery store the day before, the day of, immediately after. You know, so we pride ourselves on being able to stay open as late as we can, to get open as soon as we can, so that when our customers want to go to the grocery store, we're there for them.
You know, so what do you when you talked about this preparation, Buck Rollins, a couple of seconds ago? What do you bulk up on? What are the things that you say when you hear of an approaching storm that you know you need extra of for your customers?
Well, you mentioned a few: milk, bread, water, ice melt, bananas. In prepared foods, we bulk up on soups. Things like certain produce, you know, bagged produce items, salad mixes. In the meat department, we bulk up on our freshly ground beef, naturally raised chicken, things like that. Things that, you know, kind of comfort foods that people might hunker down with.
Yes, soups. I think
soups,
like a great soup.
Soups.
You have great chicken noodle. Not chicken noodle. It's mother's grandmother's
Mom's chicken.
Chicken
soup.
Yes, it's thank fantastic.
You. Yes, thank you very much.
Very,
Buck,
very
are you
welcome.
The Buck that does the commercials?
I am. Hi, Buck here from your community Whole Foods Market. Me.
Those are they're great. I didn't know you were the same Buck. They are great spots. So, to use a pun, have you weathered the storm? Is this essentially it? You did what you had to do. People have bought what they needed. And now it's on to the next round, or what?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're planning on it being a very busy weekend. You know, today is slow. We managed to get open at 8. A lot of stores got open at regular time. And we're expecting, once folks get dug out later today, that tomorrow and Sunday should be very busy. So, you know, whatever business we lost today, we expect to see that in the next couple days. So we're ready for the next one. You know, being New Englanders, we're used to this, and being a good group of retail operators, you know, we've figured this one out. So we've weathered quite a few storms together.
Now, I want to be clear. I want to confirm one last thing before you go. There is no secret laughter anywhere within the Whole Foods chain.
None.
Is that correct?
That
None.
Is correct.
Okay.
That's correct. We love our customers. We never laugh about it.
We knew you did.
Okay.
Hey, Buck, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you guys
for being with us. Buck Rollins is a store team leader for South Weymouth Whole Foods Market. When we come back, Callie Crossley is going to join us for her take on the big stories and smaller ones that flew under the radar this week. Plus, Callie is a little nervous about the snow, and she's going to discuss that with us as well. Up next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Joe Bergantino, Executive Director of the New England Center for Investigative Reporting.
Because we have the time to do stories that other news outlets can't do, the New England Center for Investigative Reporting is doing stories that no one else will have even the inclination in some cases to do. So we're a unique piece of American journalism based here at WGBH.
The New England Center for Investigative Reporting, now in partnership with WGBH News.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you and Huntington Theater Company, presenting Broadway's comedy Venus in Fur, called Seriously Smart and Very Funny by the New York Times. This entertaining new play from David Ives is now playing. HuntingtonTheater.org. And the Providence Country Day School, where students accept the challenge to reap experience, confidence, and independence. Open class day on Wednesday, January 15th from 9 to 12. ProvidenceCountryDay.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Joining us for her take on the big and small stories of the week, as she does every Friday, is the host of Under the Radar with Kelly Crosley, which you can hear right here on Sunday nights. Hey, Kelly, happy 2014.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I know. 2014.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Marjorie.
Who can believe it?
I'm not ready.
I know. Me neither. So, we talk about a big story. This is a huge story. The whole long-term unemployment situation. What is happening with that? People have been cut off.
They're cut off as of December the 28th. And so people making $302 a week, really? And these are people who are working, you know, trying to find work. And these are long-term unemployed. You know, overall, you got a whole bunch of other people who are unemployed. But we're talking about people who've been looking and out there. And the thing that upsets me, aside from the fact that they were cut off because, you know, we couldn't get the two halves to come together around this, though they did come together on that small agreement before the end of the year. But this was a hot button issue. I believe they're going to revisit it, and I think they'll approve it. They extended it in 2008, but just didn't do it this time. And, you know, of course, the argument is we need to find some money to pay for it. But I got to say, really? I mean, if our investment is in our people, how do you not support people in this way as they are looking for it? Here's the two things that drive me crazy, because you hear this over and over again. They're lazy. They don't want to work. That's the reason why they don't have a job, which I have to deeply resent on behalf of those people that, you know, I have seen in unemployment offices that I know who are looking and hoping for the best. Here's a new one I hadn't heard. Maybe you guys had heard this. They're holding out for big, higher paying jobs. Right. So you're looking for work, and you're sitting around on $300 holding out for the big. Really? Do people believe that? I just don't get that.
You know, the guy who's leading the charge, hopefully the Senate is going to approve this when they come back. I think it's next week in the session. But just to get a sense of the magnitude of this thing, I hate to be hyperbolic like I usually am, but I will be anyway. The atrocity is doubled by the fact that it was right around Christmas time that they didn't approve this thing. More than a million American families are affected. And that means, you know, when you multiply, add in the kids, the spouse, the whatever, that's probably 5, 6, 7 million people. In Rhode Island alone, and the reason I'm picking Rhode Island is as one of the highest unemployment rates along with Nevada. This guy, Jack Reed, who's a senator, Democrat from Rhode Island, who's leading the charge on this, 49,000 families, 49,000 in Rhode Island alone had their benefits cut off right before Christmas. And, you know, the argument goes from a lot of those who oppose this extension, and in addition to the arguments you mentioned, well, when we approve it, and we will, it'll be retroactive. That doesn't help you when you have no money. I mean, the prospect of a retroactive unemployment check is a nice thing. One, you don't know that it's going to happen. And two, you got to get by. It isn't like there's excess money. And of the heartless things that this pathetic Congress and I lay the blame at both sides, even though the Democrats wanted this to happen, many of the Republicans didn't. It's still a bipartisan mess. This is really at the top of the cruel and unusual punishment list, I'll tell you.
I can't agree with you more, and I just want to emphasize that when you talk about those families, we need to understand there are kids there. And I was taken with the fact that as these unemployment benefits were being taken away, then Project Bread came out with its annual hunger report. Now, we already know 47 million people are hungry. I've written about this. 16 million of them are kids. Okay. So here's one of the other, because they have to look at other factors other than just who is hungry, you know, what's causing it. A lot of the people who are barely making it make less than $11 an hour, the parents of these kids. So they're ending up needing the help of a Project Bread, standing in the food banks and in the pantries that so many kind people and churches are opening up. But those places are overwhelmed with people trying to just survive. And that's one of the big things when you lost your money.
You know,
this is crazy.
You know, while we're blaming, I just want to say, while we're blaming Congress, I want you to blame Marjorie, too. And the reason for this, Kelly, you may not be aware, is Project Bread raises most of its money when? During the Walk for Hunger.
Yes.
And who has written endless columns trashing the Walk for Hunger? Marjorie, now why,
I think
Marjorie?
I've only written 4 or 5.
Whatever. Now, Marjorie, why is it? And I know you support poor people.
Because they go right by my house.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. I can't get out.
It's a great inconvenience.
You know, and so you have to kind of wend your way. You have to drive, basically, from Boston to Fitchburg to get across the street is sort of how it goes when Project
Bread. You wrote a similar talk. Scott Lehigh, Grace with the Globe, right.
You know my friends would call that, Marjorie?
What?
A high-class problem.
High-class problem.
That's a good line, actually. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Marjorie.
But you know what the thing about the unemployment insurance that is also galling is that what you read over and over again is that the longer you're unemployed, the harder it is to find another job, and there's a bias against you. What have you been doing for 6 months?
Exactly.
What have you been doing
for
a year? What have you been doing for a year and a half? And that makes these people's problems even more.
And let me
terrible.
Just add to that. I did a story, this is a year and a half, because I couldn't believe it. And I had to call in the guy who did the report and say, I'm sure I misread this because I just don't get statistics. Are you saying that employers are saying, if you are not employed at this moment, I don't want to talk to you, even if you have the skill? He said, yes, that's exactly what they're saying. I said, well, I don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, so it just keeps piling on, and it's ridiculous. And we would hope that your government would support you in this hard time because you want to pay taxes. Everybody in that line is hoping to get a job and hoping to be able to pay their taxes. It's crazy.
Now, as we know, this starting January 1st this year, businesses aren't going to be able to import or produce the 40-watt and 60-watt incandescent light bulbs because of this, you know, the federal regulations on this because of energy efficiency problems.
And when did those federal regulations, by the way, for energy efficiency pass? Under which president?
George Bush.
George Bush, that's right. George Bush the Younger.
So, before you state where you are about this, I just do want to confess one thing about the light bulbs. I don't know if you have white lights at Christmas time, but the incandescent white lights are much prettier than the LED white lights, which are kind of gray.
You better buy them up fast, Marjorie.
And the non-LEDs. I mean, I was at Target, and I went back, and I got more of the white lights that are the incandescent because they're yellow and warm.
Yep.
And the LEDs aren't.
They're working harder on it to try to close the gap. But I'm with you. I inadvertently have hoarded light bulbs, I realize.
How do you inadvertently hoard? You either hoard them or you don't
hoard
them.
I keep thinking I don't have a bulb. So every time I have to buy a bulb, I get some more. So I went in my garage and I noticed I have a lot of 60-watt bulbs. So I'm kind of set for many years by the time this thing goes out. But what I didn't know, and these stories are important to remind you, it's only 10% efficient, according to the EPA. It's mostly heat.
Yeah.
Which brings me to another critical issue, which I'm glad has been resolved, and that's the Easy Bake Oven, which, as you know, has a bulb to
bake. Well, how is that resolved?
Goods.
What are you talking about? What's the deal?
Well, the Hasbro has now figured it out, so they've removed the bulb, believe it or not. So now it's a heating element.
Really?
Yes, and that converts electricity into heat, which bakes your muffin in the Easy Bake Oven. So
you wanted to know that.
You
use an Easy Bake Oven? Is that correct?
Well, I'm just saying this is a critical issue that needed to be resolved.
Well, it did. Now, let me tell you, speaking of critical issue, Marjorie, in light of the fact that you and Kelly Crossley apparently are pro-incandescent, she inadvertently has a closet full. You're concerned.
I have LEDs, too.
Now, do you know who your heroine is? You probably don't even know this.
No.
Listen to this woman who filed. Well, just listen to this woman. Woman who clearly is leading the charge on something you both care a lot about.
I introduce the Light Bulb Freedom of Choice Act. I am so proud of that bill. I introduced it after the 2007 Energy Act. Let me tell you, President Bachman will allow you to buy any light bulb you want in the United States of America.
Now, unfortunately, since she didn't become president. That was Michelle Bachmann when she still thought she'd be president of the Republican Leadership Conference in 2011. The light bulb, when we first read about this, Marjorie and I, the Light Bulb Freedom of Choice Act was one of her pet things.
It's going to propel her into the White House.
It apparently didn't work out.
It didn't work out. Well, you know, the other thing about that they have to work on, too, is dimmer. You know,
CFLs?
Yes, the LEDs.
You have to get a certain kind of plate. I know this because my electrician, my fabulous female electrician, told me about it and told me what kind of, because I hate Home Depot.
Yeah.
I become, you know, like all sweaty.
Overwhelmed.
In there. Yeah. So
I'm worried about the things falling on me. You ever look at, they've got these like, these
I don't
ovens
worry about that.
About
I just don't know what's going on.
40 feet above your head. You know, suppose one of them just tips to the side.
I don't worry about
You're
that. I don't know what's going on. I don't want to be there. And then if somebody says something different from exactly what somebody told me to get, I become hysterical. She told me the 896. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Do you get upset when you go to a restaurant that has a menu with like 3,000 items on it,
No, because I can
too?
Understand that.
Okay, fine.
I don't like that either. I don't like that. What's the place that has all the
Cheesecake
items?
Cheesecake Factory.
Cheesecake Factory.
Well, also has the largest portions in the Western world.
You're there for an hour trying to read the menu.
An issue. Now, Callie, the thing we really wanted to talk to you about today is you're a Southern kid, as
yes,
we know. You're a Memphis woman,
yes,
correct?
Yes, I am.
And look at the look on her face.
Yes.
And as a result, we wanted a Southerner's perspective on what we call either snowpocalypse, Snowmageddon, whatever it is that happened the last few days. How do you take to this?
Do you know that famous painting where the guy has his hands up next to his face and there's a scream?
Oh, sure. Yeah. The scream. It's called the scream, right?
The scream. Yeah. That's where I am. I'm hysterical. So I'm up. I have to get up very early because I had to come in here because, daggone it, I'm essential. So I'm looking out my window trying to see if those buses are moving so I can at least get to Harvard Square and then figure something out. I'm looking. No bus. Because this morning there was a big delay on the Red Line. So I guess the buses were affected a little bit, which was, I have to say, that given what Rich Davies said and everything, usually they are right on time. I have caught a bus in the blizzard on time. So I, you know, they get out there. I don't know when they go to work. So I'm hysterical. I've, you know, been to the grocery store five times already, even though I already have everything. I can't stand it. And the thing that saved me this morning is when I got to Harvard Square and now trying to understand these new apps that the MBTA has.
Which tell you about the timing.
Yes,
about
to tell me when the 86 bus was going to bring me, that was going to bring me here. Couldn't figure it out standing there because, you know, I'm a little slow on these things. And I looked up and there was the Brighton Landing Shuttle. Driven by George, and there was a halo around him in my sight, and I heard the music, and I walked through the snow to him, and he drove right here to WGBH.
So what's the buildup like? When you first heard, when did the forecast first come out? It was pretty accurate.
I am
almost
the Rain
to
Man
the
of Snow.
What's that?
I'm the Rain Man of Snow. I knew this ages ago.
Okay,
they had
so you
two
knew-
European reports that were different at first, couldn't decide quite what the amount was going to be.
But you knew it was coming.
I knew it was
so
coming.
So when you first hear that it's coming, even if it's days away, does the panic start to
set
in?
Oh, absolutely. I started running around doing everything I had tried to do that won't require me to be outside. Mm-hmm. I canceled everything. I called my doctor. I had an appointment this morning, and she said, is there a reason? I said, are you kidding? It's snowing. I'm not coming in there. She said, so I do all of that because it makes no sense to be out in it. It's crazy, and it's nerve-wracking
does it
and
snow?
Scary.
Did it ever snow
driving.
In Memphis when you were a kid?
Yeah, but, you know, it was 1 inch, and we stayed in,
yeah.
You know, because nobody knows how to drive in it.
They don't.
And I'm watching George navigate the shuttle this morning, and he had a little fishtail that he could correct. If I'm in the car, I'm hysterical. I'm in there screaming and turning, so better I'm not on the road. Don't we agree?
Okay, so you normally drive to work, but today you said forget about it.
Oh, anytime it snows.
Wow.
I mean, you're the only good part of this, by the way, is that you're honest with yourself.
I'm
serious.
Honest.
You were totally in touch with your real feelings about snow, and which relates to the final thing. People who have, and I don't like snow. I don't like doing anything in it either. Uh-huh. But and I don't have quite the reaction you do, even though it's pretty close. Why do people who have such a problem with snow and winter, as I know I do, and apparently, why do we choose to live in places?
Because we have a job.
We do have a job.
Let's go back to the first story, the unemployment benefits.
You know, yeah, long-term employed is better than long-term unemployed.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I will say one thing. It was so cold this morning. I'm now going to have to go try to find some really, really warm gloves because I almost got frostbite.
Painful.
And
it is just unbelievable.
I told Callie, mittens.
Well, but I'm told that the skiers, you were telling me that this morning, Marjorie, they have the good gloves. But I want to make sure that when you go in those stores where everybody's so happy to be in the snow that you know, and they're carried away by the endorphin of being outside skiing. I'm not playing that. I want some warm gloves. I don't care about the endorphins. Want my hands warm. I'm not trying to be outside.
Okay.
You should explain. Do people know why mittens work the best?
Your fingers,
I hate mitts because
they
feed
together,
off the warmth of
it. It's like the birds we just talked about with
exactly.
The birds all huddle together, 13 little birds, and they have a wild night.
Well, if I could just get some snow shovelers, that's my next thing. So far, that's going down the tube.
I actually had a kid. Yeah. I was so happy. A kid came by, knocked on the door. You want a shovel?
You're so lucky.
I know. I was so impressed.
Very lucky.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Marjorie will come over after the show. If you know, right. I'm serious.
I don't like it this cold, but didn't you like to sled when you were a kid? Go sled?
No.
Who liked to sled?
I did not.
Who does that?
Sled.
No.
I love to sled.
No. Hot cocoa is the only reason to be a, you know.
Yeah, those little, the things you blow up now, those tubes that you blow up,
right.
What do you call those things?
Yeah.
Tubes.
They're great. And you fly down the hills on those.
Okay, so Callie, now I have all this anxiety about leaving at the 2 o'clock today. What are you doing Sunday night?
Sunday night, we're talking about the future of Boston. Of course, you know, one of my panic moments is that the Snow Czar retired today.
He did.
I'm concerned about that. And we talked about...
But did you see that Marty Walsh is the only major appointment he has made? Is this in the Herald this morning, I think? He has appointed an interim Snow Czar,
yes,
an 18-year Department of Public Works guy.
Right.
He's in charge of this. So
we're talking about future Boston and some of the issues that he's going to have to grapple with. And one of the things that we talked about a bit with Malia Lazu, who's with the Future Boston Alliance, which makes sense to have this conversation.
That's the thing she does with Greg Selko,
right,
from Carmeloop, right.
And she has been talking about since November, where she wrote about this city needs to have a civic conversation. Scott Lehi picked that up and is now emphasizing that, meaning that at this moment in time of transition, it's really good to get everybody's thoughts about how we think we can move forward and then sort of bring them together in a way that countries around the world have done. She mentioned some innovative ways that they've done this. Now, I think Marty Walsh is trying to do that with these conversations he's having all around. But there are a lot of competing interests, some huge competing interests, transportation and business and all of these things that he has to pay attention to. And better that we all have had a conversation about it, even if we don't all get what we want. And so that's the overall nature of our conversation.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get home tonight?
I am hoping that George is outside.
George. It's not her and George.
George, yeah.
George,
he's
if you're listening.
Hope he is. Okay. We're going to talk to you. Thank you
Stay
very
safe,
much, Kelly Crossley,
thanks.
For being with us as always. As she is every Friday, and she's the host of Under the Radar. You can catch her Sunday nights at 6 o'clock. We're going to talk to you guys up next. How are you navigating the store? The storm, rather. Are you one of those people that went and bought 17 loaves of bread and 4 gallons of milk to get you through 2 days of the storm of the century until the next storm of the century? We're going to take your calls. Coping with the snowstorm up next. Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
A collection of stories from independent producers. Public Radio Remix. The coolest thing you can hear in the dark from 89.7 WGBH.
We love our contributors. That means you and WGBH's masterpiece. Changes in the air as 3 generations of the Crawleys have conflicting interests in the estate. Watch the highly anticipated premiere of Downton Abbey Season 4, Sunday at 9 on WGBH 2.
Public Radio from Boston for New England. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III from the WGBH Curiosity Desk, and you're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston. Online at WGBHnews.org. Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Callie had to leave. She's buying a couple more loaves of bread to get her through the weekend. So how did you guys weather the storm, so to speak? Did you stockpile enough non-perishables to get you through the next couple of years of storms? Are you responsible for the dearth of organic baby carrots at Whole Foods?
Yeah, how
weird. Or did
you
treat this like any other two-day inconvenience? 877-301-8970. You know, you and I, for the years we've known each other, we've talked about this run on bread and water and tuna. And it becomes almost a joke. But if you go to virtually any supermarket one day into what's supposed to be a day and a half storm, which it was, and maybe, you know, there's some after effects today, obviously, particularly on the South Shore and that sort of thing on the Cape, there is nothing on the shelves. And you say to yourself, what are people thinking? What is the thought process where they conclude that they need gallons and gallons and gallons bottled water?
Fear.
Do you do any
Fear.
Of this, or do you not?
No, the only thing that I get is milk, because my kids are all home and they go through with the friends.
Yeah, but how much milk do you get? What does that mean? How much milk?
I have a gallon and a half of milk.
Well, that's not
insane. It's not. And the other thing is, I mean, where are you going to put the extra, unless you have one of those big freezers, which I don't. I mean, you can put it on the back porch where the milk will freeze. I mean, where are you going to put the leftovers? So, but, you know, it's so funny. Listen to the governor. The governor is saying now we need to have, if he comes on with us later, we'll ask him about this, you have to have the non-electric can opener because, God forbid, you know, if the electricity goes out, you can't open any cans for 2 days. So you can.
I don't think that's unreasonable. You think that's unreasonable?
Well, we're all over 21 here. I guess you kind of know. All these stories say about shoveling, telling everybody how to shovel. Now, happily, this is not bad snow to shovel. It's fairly light. But all these instructions on how to shovel. Well, you shovel out your front door and then you proceed toward the car. I mean, what do you think? We're going to start with the car and then proceed back in? I mean, it's just kind of like, are we a bunch of dopes? I mean, that's kind of what I think is a little odd. 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. Are you one of the people that runs into the store? And if you are, we won't make fun of you too much, and buys like 14 loaves of bread and 17 cans of tuna and, you know, 5 gallons of milk because you're worried about running out of food. That's the other thing.
What are they worried about? How are they going to run out of food?
Everybody just made their New Year's resolution, right? What was the primary New Year's resolution?
Lose weight.
Lose weight, exactly. Yeah. So maybe have a little fast for 12 hours. Or maybe you just get by on toast. You know, it's not like we only
need bread to make toast.
Well, okay. You can eat something else. You can eat yogurt. I mean, none of us, I don't think, are in danger of starving to death in 2 days without, you know, a can of tuna. That's what
But don't you think it's almost genetic? It's like passed down. It's a ritual. I think whose parents, predecessors were hoarders, to use your word, of these kinds of things around storm time, I think become hoarders themselves, don't you think?
Now, do you have your first aid kit ready? I mean, I know if you live in a place and I'm not, you know, if you're out in the country somewhere or
your sister lives on the Cape, which is pretty hard
hit. That's right. She has to be ready with her flashlight and her first aid kit.
Well, you're not you're taking it too far. You should have a flashlight. There weren't a lot of power outages because of the snow.
I figure that's why I have 911, Jim.
What? So they come to your house?
Well, if you have some kind of
accident. But now you're going too far. A flashlight, a basic candle.
What does
your
first aid kit consist of,
What
Jim?
Does it have?
Yeah.
It has a couple of Band-Aids. A tourniquet, just think. No, I mean, I have the basics. The basics, I'm not taking it to the extreme you are. The basics.
You have a tourniquet? Makes
it, no, I don't. I don't have a first aid kit either. I mean, I live in the city. I don't live.
That's what I just said.
No, I understand.
I live in the city.
Who do you know, who has put together a first aid kit in anticipation of the storm? Who would that? Name some names, Marjorie. Who are those people?
I don't know anybody
I don't
who's
think
put together
so.
A first aid kit.
But we do know that if the store shelves of things like bread, water, and cans of tuna are empty, by definition, as I said, people are hoarding these things.
They're hoarding
in
them.
Anticipation. You know, you expect them to see Noah on an ark going down their street. It is. I don't understand the phenomenon. And you know what I also love doing?
Yeah.
You know, this perverse thing when Callie was being honest about the anxiety she feels in anticipation of and then during the storm itself. I appreciate that. One of the things I love is watching people doing the hoarding. I was at Whole Foods yesterday in Newton yesterday, and I'm watching these people who look totally normal in every other respect walking out with, you assume they're in charge of like a Girl Scout troop or something. I mean, who are they protecting from the elements? In any case, you can tell where Marjorie and I are coming from. 877-301-8970. Callie, well, we should also throw into this discussion, since sort of a potpourri, Callie has a concern that there are not enough shovelers for hire. Usually people are talking about buying shovels. She's taking it one step further. I'm totally with her. Where do you find good shovelers?
Well, that's why you have sons. To shovel the snow.
I don't have any sons.
And empty the garbage.
Is your son doing that, or is he lying on the couch?
No.
I don't think.
I got home yesterday. I said, get out there.
Did he do
it? And shovel. Yes, he did. He did it twice, actually. I must give
him
credit.
That's quite nice. Okay, 877-301-8970. We're taking your calls on a whole spectrum of things you had to endure during Snowpocalypse 2014. Let's go out to the highway where Michael is on the phone. Michael, thanks for calling Boston Public Radio. Hey there.
Good afternoon. Your show's always great.
Thanks.
Jim, there's a definitive day.
Yeah.
It's called February 1978.
The blizzard?
Everybody goes back. Now, be honest. Did you run out of anything? And where were you in 78 in the blizzard?
Where was I? I was in New York City. I didn't move here until the early 80s. So maybe that's why I don't have.
I was here. But the liquor stores were very busy during the blizzard of 78, Michael, I recall. Correct? Everybody was coming home with the snow up to their thighs, with their cases of beer and their big, huge things of jug wine. That's what I remember, Michael. How about you?
Well, it was pretty bad. I was actually living in Winthrop. And you could walk. You would be walking on roofs of cars. There was so much snow. And you remember, he called a state of emergency, so you couldn't drive.
Yeah.
So people were going to a supermarket who couldn't get supplies. I obviously think that some people just think that, you know, oh, surprise, surprise, they're deathly afraid that could happen again, because a lot of people ran. I mean, there were no ATMs then also.
That's
so
true.
If you didn't have a couple of bucks in your pocket when you came home that Friday, you thought you were going to be fine. I'll get a little of this, a little of that, and I'll go out Monday. And I think people still have that fear, and I think that's the definitive day. I mean, I assume a bunch of young kids, they get you know, juju beads and a bottle of vodka, and they're fine. But I think a lot of us who lived through that, I think that's a definitive day.
You know, Michael, I think even though I didn't live here, obviously I've heard scads of people talk about it, I think your analysis has merit. I really do. Michael, thanks for the call.
I think about
if you did
thing
live through it, how long was everything out of commission? Like a week and a half?
Or? Oh, it was days and days. But the thing that happened in the Blizzard of 78, people that don't remember, is that the snow came down so fast. Because you hear all these stories about people were driving 5 miles. They left home. The snow hadn't started. 5 miles later, they had to abandon their car because the snow just fell. Like it just fell out of the sky, and you were suddenly
that's what snow does.
Like the great pictures they had of Route 3 and 195 between Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cars just stuck.
I know, I've seen them. They're
and
great.
Everybody had to get out and walk, and you had to be kind of young and agile and healthy to walk in through thigh-high snow. Anyway,
so do you think he's on to something? I mean, do you think there is a little residue?
It could be true. You have the fear left over, and that was a great point about the ATMs, too.
That is a great point, yeah.
Because what would you do if you didn't have any cash? You'd have to bribe them at the liquor store.
You have to pillage, essentially, is what you have. A lot of pillaging.
You have to rape and pillage, Jim. Is that what you were saying?
No, I did not say that. You did.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was joking. Yeah, Deb from Rhode Island. What do you think, Deb?
Hi. Well, I can agree with the caller prior.
Yep.
I was very young during the storm of 78, but that, I think, has merit in the name Hercules. I don't think that this one does. Yeah, people were a week. I was a week without water, electricity. Granted, I did find my way to a relative's home, but it was much, much bigger than this, and people may do. I think things get a little blown out of proportion these days.
Well, yeah, they do. And well, that's two people voting for 1978 as the sort of predicate for all this. So when you say you didn't have water for a week, meaning the water was not running in your house for a week, is that what you meant?
Right. I have a well.
Oh, you
and
do?
I'm not on town water because once the power goes out, I lose everything.
Huh.
So I think I can talk a little bit more to being stranded than, you know, maybe just not having enough bread and milk in the house.
Yeah, I have not done the well experience myself, Deb, so I think you can. Deb, thanks very much for the perspective.
Thank you. We
appreciate it.
Listen to Nanda's snow attire. She cross-country skis, so she has lots of warm clothes. This is what she wears outside to shovel.
Mm-hmm.
Thick fleece stirrup pants, fleece hat with visor and air muffs that tie under the chin, a parka with extra high collar, a buff around the neck, glove liners and mittens with hand warmers and pockets for the feet, fleece socks, wool leg warmers, winter hiking boots lined with fur, and finally, a fake fur scarf and sunglasses.
You're going to ridicule her, too?
No,
that's fabulous.
I'm not ridiculing her. I'm saying this is a woman who is prepared for the elements. She said she shoveled for nearly 2 hours just to make way for the plow guy in that outfit.
Did you see the great photograph on what was the site where the pit guy in Central Square, Universal Hub, had a picture in Central Square of a slightly overweight guy shoveling snow yesterday with his shirt off?
Yeah, what was that about?
I have no idea. I mean, I assume he likes the elements, but it's a great photograph.
You know what else you notice in your neighborhood? There are some people. I have a guy across the street from me. He is a great guy. He shovels until every little drop of...
He's almost catching them as they're coming down.
Yes.
Yeah,
he has got the most... The steps, the driveway. He shovels out the driveway. He's got a two-family. It's immaculate. And there are some other people who don't shovel at all. I mean, you go from the people that are fanatical to the people who don't even care. It's outrageous, Jim.
It is outrageous. Let's go to Christine. You're in Randolph. You're on Boston Public Radio with Jim and Marjorie. Hi there, Christine.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I just would like to thank you for putting a little perspective on this storm.
Well, you're welcome.
The hype has been absurd. Last night, apparently, nothing else happened in the world. You could not get national news unless you went over to maybe some cable stations. I think I agree with the previous callers that the blizzard of 78 is in everyone's memory. I do remember that. But we didn't have the kind of advance notice then either.
Right.
And I think what the local channels are forgetting now is people are better prepared. So get off the air for a while and stop making people more nervous and come on again when something happens that we need to know about.
Well, Christine, you know, let me interrupt you to say that I think as an employee of another place, in addition to WGBH Radio, I work at New England Cable News, which I think is the best weather people. We do virtually 24/7 weather at a time like this. But let me explain to you why it's done. They are the highest ratings by far that the station ever gets. And what that means in English is it's what people want.
Yeah.
During storms, I'm not quarreling with your concern about do we in the media in general overhype these things, and I think mm-hmm. you probably do, but there's a huge appetite in the public to get every detail about what's happening in every community, including those which they will never enter, you know?
Exactly.
When you saw the video, we had one of our reporters like in Scituate last night. I don't know if you saw any of this, Marjorie.
Yes.
And Christine, and the standing on the beach there.
Oh, it was, that was
the
worth
the ferocity of
to see the waves. That was worth the news trucks going down there, because you certainly hope no one's house is going to be, but just to see nature and the ocean in a situation like that, it was just your jaw was dropped.
I felt kind of sorry for some of the very professional newscasters.
Yeah.
Because they were on constantly, were reduced to saying things like, in the middle of a storm, well, it's snowing and the wind is blowing.
Well, that is true, though.
You know, I know.
Yeah. Christine, you should be a media critic in your spare time. Hey, Christine, thanks for the call.
You know what?
Tell the Jack Harper story. Jack Harper is one of our favorite reporters.
Well, Jack Harper is going to be, I would say, in his late 50s, maybe even early 60s.
He's been around
for
a long time. He's a great reporter.
I turned on Channel 5, the news last night. He's a great reporter, and he's out there, and he's got the parka, and he's got the hood on, and he's the mittens and the whole thing. And he says something like, I'm paraphrasing. He says, well, you could say this is a story about snow, but actually in my case, it could be a story about financial planning, because if I plan better, I wouldn't be here right now in this typhoon. It was very funny. And you know, the other thing is, sometimes the reporters, you know, in blizzards and hurricanes, like they're holding on to a lamppost or a street sign, and the wind is blowing. You expect them any moment to be like
the vertical,
swept off their feet,
parallel
perpendicular.
To the pavement,
what does it mean when you're
parallel.
Parallel? Thank you. Parallel to the ground. I mean, it's just hysterical. I'm glad I don't get that duty very much. It
now,
be,
who's the,
awful.
By the way, speaking of the story of Blizzard of 78, who is the iconic storm figure,
Shelby Scott,
who we miss every year?
Shelby Scott.
Yeah.
She's long retired. She was a great reporter for WBZ, and she was out there in the worst conditions, perpendicular to the, or parallel to the ground, whatever it is. You sure it's not perpendicular?
No,
it's parallel to the ground.
We are now perpendicular to the ground,
we're perpendicular,
you and I,
now. Thank
at least
you very
for the
much.
Time being.
And you know about the Blizzard of 78, too. The meteorologists mostly missed it.
I know that.
I believe Bob Copeland from WCVB was the mm-hmm. only guy who called it correctly. They didn't anticipate this just deluge of snow that landed or went down so quickly, and so we were all stuck.
You know, it's amazing. We have a huge, beautiful whole wall of window here, which is actually quite nice. Look at the ground. Look at the road.
The road is wonderful.
It's empty. I mean, it's
empty.
Totally blacktop. All you can see.
Everybody's speeding.
Sidewalks are—they're not speeding.
And but all you do notice the people walking by.
What's that?
They're freezing.
Well, it's cold.
It's really cold.
Single
out.
Digits.
Yes,
are,
single
are
digits.
Thereabouts.
The dogs really don't like to go out in this kind of weather. Okay, let's go to Mel. Mel in Salem. Hi, Mel.
Hey, Mel.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
I just want to say I think this storm is great. It's not Armageddon. We have to have perspective. It is January. It is New England. We are expected to have snow. Its perks are it makes us check on our neighbors. You see neighbors you don't see because you're shoveling. You get to make homemade soup. And no, I have no milk in the refrigerator. Life is good.
Wait, so how did you get such a healthy attitude? I'm serious.
Well, I grew up in the country, so I have farm perspective.
There you
and
go.
My dad and my brothers and whatever, they plowed rows. So in the storm of 78, I actually remember going out with my dad in our very small town, and we plowed the town and the country roads and all of that, and they literally plowed for 24 hours, and I jumped out of the snowplow and said, I'll go make breakfast at 4:30 in the morning. So
oh my gosh.
The plows would come down, and I went and made breakfast. You know, for the guys that were plowing and my dad, and they were like, okay. And it was just, I mean, it's just so amazing to be out on those plows. And we just have to keep perspective. Like, if we come up with your plan of like, okay, if I don't have electricity, check with the neighbor, what's our plan, what's whatever. It's like.
You have a lot of happiness in your voice.
Mel,
is it possible later today you could go and shovel Callie Crossley's car out, or you're not free?
You know, if if I could get, if the trains were running on time, I would be happy to come.
I know you would. Hey, Mel, you're great. Happy New Year, and thanks so much for the call.
Thanks.
Don't you wish you had that attitude about everything, Marjorie? I mean, was that like a healthy, upbeat, beautiful perspective on this?
Yes, it was a beautiful perspective. Elizabeth emailed that she just got in from hand shoveling a 40-foot driveway.
Yeah.
New England heaven, I really love it. Here's a thought from Jeremy that...
What is that, a 40? You said a 40-foot driveway?
40-foot, that's right. Elizabeth has gotten her workout for the next 2 weeks. Jeremy emails, my crank theory is that as mammals, we are simply hardwired to seek existential struggles, and where none exists, we create one. Sort of interesting,
well,
isn't
I think
it?
There's a point to that.
David's criticizing me for saying son's shovel as opposed to the dainty, privileged little female children. It is sexist of me, David. I'm guilty. Guilty as charged. Did I say Bob Copeland from Channel 5?
I think you did,
Blizzard,
yes.
78? Okay, I want to make sure because someone emailed about that.
Our number is 877-301-8970. We're talking to you about how you're weathering, a good choice of words, weathering the storm. And our particular obsession, which some of you have responded to, is the fact that you not find a bottle of water or a loaf of bread or a can of tuna fish anywhere in New England, essentially. With a couple of exceptions. Let's take a couple more calls. Mark, you're in Cambridge. You're next on Boston Public Radio. Hey there.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Great.
Marjorie, how are you?
Excellent.
I think a lot of this is generational, too. I mean, my grandmother, who is 97 years old, if I'm driving to Worcester for work, make sure... You have three sandwiches and two bottles of water. And I'm like, Graham, there's 500 places for me to stop on the way. You know, I have to have flares in the trunk. I mean, it's insane. So, you know, some of this is just back in the day when you couldn't just go out and order a pizza, you know, as easily. People get crazy. But I do think the hype around it, a couple of the callers back mentioned, I think the hype around it is crazy. Now, maybe with the storm this big, even though it wasn't huge, is one thing. But it's, even if we get 3 inches, you know, or 4 inches, it's the lead story on every newscast. And I think it raises people's anxiety around, you know, what to expect. So it's a combination of a lot of things. But, you know, it's New England. We get snow. What I don't understand is do people think that rules of the road go out the window when there's snow?
Meaning what?
Well, I was driving last night, and some guy just stopped in the middle of Memorial Drive and puts on his hazards. just because there's snow, you can't do that, you know, or people going through red lights because the condition, you know, if anything, we should be more careful about how we drive. But I think people just lose their minds, and they think it's, you know, the end of the earth, you know, the end of the world, and we all have to start, you know, being savages and... you know, the rules go out the window. It's crazy.
Hey, Mark, that was a great call. Say hi to your grandmother for us. She sounds terrific.
Well, you know, she's making sandwiches right now.
I bet she is.
And
thanks,
also,
Mark.
There were no cell phones. I mean, if you get stuck in the road now, you can call. I mean, that did not.
That guy made a great
true.
Point about no ATMs, which I hadn't thought about in 1978, obviously. No cell phones, all that sort of stuff. Let's take one more. Sheila in Norton, you are next on Boston Public Radio. Hey there, Sheila.
Happy New Year, guys.
And Happy New Year to you.
I was just thinking, I think they were calling us a little bit, they overcalled it, let's say, but I do think it was helpful to have the warning about the frostbite and the weather that the temp would be very low.
That's true.
And,
that's true.
Yeah, and I think that it has been very cool. In fact, I believe flashers are now forced to just describe themselves.
Sheila, it's a pleasure. Rotten Connection, we got to let you go. Happy New Year. It's far too cold, too. That's
it
a very,
is very
good point.
Cold.
It really is
it's
too
very
cold.
Cold.
Even though, as I wisely, because I know meteorology, it is, I've learned in the last few days, the beauty of the intense cold, as we said to Rich Davey, is the snow is much lighter. It's not that wet, horrible crap that is impossible to shovel.
Yeah. Do you know why that is?
Do I know why it is?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
Fine. You'll describe it to us now, I think,
that.
Who probably does.
Emily Rooney.
Emily Rooney,
She's
I think so.
She's coming up next. Open mic with Emily Rooney. We'll also get her wonderful fame list, the first one of 2014. We'll talk to Emily about a bunch of things, snow, Jerry Remy. That conversation next on Boston Public Radio.
You're listening to the Public Radio Remix on 89.7 WGBH. It's like public radio on shuffle. The coolest thing you can hear in the dark.
Funding for our programs comes from you. And WGBH's masterpiece, Changes in the Air, as three generations of the Crawleys have conflicting interests in the estate. Watch the highly anticipated premiere of Downton Abbey Season 4, Sunday at 9 on WGBH 2. And the growing number of WGBH sustainers who manage their contributions to public radio with the help of monthly installments and automatic renewals. Learn more about the ease of sustaining membership at WGBH.org.
Public Radio from Boston for New England. I'm Peter Sagal of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and you're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston. Online at WGBHnews.org. Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Joining us, as she does every Friday for Open Mic, is Emily Rooney. Emily, Happy New Year.
Hey, Marge.
Hey, Jim.
Happy New to you. Happy New to you, Emily. So glad to talk to you. One of my favorite things every single week. We're going to start out on a tough note, though. We talked yesterday with medical ethicist Art Kaplan about the really tragic case of Jahi McMath, the 13-year-old girl from California who went in for tonsillectomy. Mm. Something went horribly wrong. She's been declared dead by physicians out there at the hospital. Her family, though, is hoping for a miracle and that she's going to come back. And you have said you're willing to share a story that you had to deal with similar issues involving your late husband.
I did. You know, I actually have not ever talked about this publicly. It's not something that's still, even 17 years later, rather painful. But in July of 1997, Kirby was playing tennis.
Kirby Perkins,
a reporter for Channel 5, had a heart attack. We took him to – I wasn't there. I was home packing for vacation. They called me from – I actually beat him to the hospital. By the time he got there, his heart was beating. He looked great. You know, he squeezed my hand. I said, Kirby, I'm here. He squeezed my hand. And then, you know, all these medical things happen when your heart has stopped. Your brain swells. That's the main thing. So – within a matter of hours, he was in very tough shape, having convulsions, and you know. But the medical staff was fairly, you know, hopeful.
Because he was young.
He was 47. Yeah. But later that night, and this was the same day, and I will never ever forget it, because you know I was getting encouraging, you know, and my sister was calling, oh, you know, people live, and you know this and that. Actually, I think it was the next day. Probably 24 hours had passed, and we were still hoping that he would come to and all that. And one of the nurses pulled me aside and said, and we were about to have one of those brain scans, because you want to know how much brain scan there was. And she said, well, you know, I can tell you already what his brain activity is going to be. And I said, really? How do you know? And she says, well, he's posturing, which is a term I'd never heard of, and it will stick with me for the rest of my life. She said, well, it's an early form of rigor mortis, when you're when basically something has shut down, in this case your brain, and your body starts to posture in the form of rigor mortis, a term I'd never heard of. But my point with this is that there's a way you can know for sure whether pulling the plug is the right thing to do. I mean, medical – it's not just a matter of, you know, you hope that something's going to happen, because actually his brain scan – showed some activity. That was the really horrible part of it. The brain scan showed activity. But when that nurse said that to me, and then I really looked at him, and I thought, she's right, you know?
So he was alive and breathing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it that he could be breathing?
He was breathing on his own.
Unlike
this young woman, by the way, in
but how
in
could rigor
Oakland.
Mortis be starting when he was breathing on his own?
It's called posturing. It's not rigor mortis. It's not literal rigor mortis.
It's the beginnings.
It's the beginnings.
So you're were you as accepting as you sound like you were?
Of course not. I mean, you know, I was
devastated. I don't mean emotionally.
But I knew I was going to lose him.
So when you see – you said you hadn't told the story before, and we appreciate your willingness to share it with us. Have you seen Jahi McMath's parents on TV?
Yes, I have.
When you see them, what's your
– Well, theirs is also more of a spiritual hope, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, as you know, I have kind of a more less spiritual. Let's just put it that way. Did I want him to die? Was I hoping to get this thing over with? No. But that's the other thing. You know, talk about Ariel Sharon, who's now been in a coma for eight years.
Yes. I mean, former prime minister of Israel.
Ridiculous. You know, I mean, once I knew my husband was going to die, I mean, I was going to make sure it wasn't pro. And there are ways to do that, too. Talk about medical ethicists. I mean, until Kevorkian kind of messed things up in a way, people were doing things to kind of hurry the process along.
Yeah.
I mean, you're allowed to. If you think a patient is in pain, if you feel that there are things that you can do, and a lot of people do it, you know, a slow morphine drip, a speeded up morphine drip, and you know, it's a very confidential process that you go through with a physician. You know, I wasn't doing it, but
so what did you do?
You said
let him go.
Yeah, yeah,
and we
put him on morphine,
and they took and he died.
Mm-hmm.
How long afterwards?
4 days.
4 days.
Yeah. So it was a long time.
And when they did the brain scan, you had no...
Well, you know, you do, but when you... I mean, I can't read a brain scan, but when you look at it, you know, they show you, here's a normal brain, here's this one.
Yeah.
See, the problem with his was it was not a flat line. That's which is why he could breathe. Some I don't know all the epicenters. I don't know all the medical terms and everything. But you know, they
why
gave
did,
me.
The, did the nurse go to you? I mean, that was obviously an
she
informal.
She wanted to bring me down to earth.
She did.
Yeah,
because she knew you were much more hopeful than the situation merited.
Yeah.
Well, thank God for the nurses.
I know.
I mean, I've always felt that with my few dealings with the medical establishment, that the nurses are the guardian angels.
Yeah, she wanted to bring me down to earth, and I thought I really appreciated it. I probably never told her that because it was so devastating, but I never forgot it. You know, it stuck with me. And she was right. I could see when she said that what was happening.
So can we go from one painful story to another painful
story? But
that's
a very useful story, though.
It is.
Because I think a lot of people have a very difficult time at that moment.
Speaking of difficult times, Dan Shaughnessy wrote a piece in The Globe today that I've been waiting for someone to write. It was a great piece, the title of which is "Will Jerry Remy Be Back? No Easy Answers Here." He starts by saying there's no local broadcaster more popular than Jerry Remy. Obviously, people know he's from Fall River, Marjorie's hometown, former All-Star second baseman for the Red Sox, and beyond being a very successful business person, maybe one of the most entertaining, knowledgeable sportscasters on NESN ever. And the issue that's, and I assume everybody knows, that his son is accused of murdering Jennifer Martell and leaving a beautiful little kid behind and all that sort of thing. And immediately after the murder, Jerry Remy took time off. He hasn't been on the broadcast since. He said in a tweet at that time, "It's clear that this isn't the time for me to return to broadcast Red Sox games." This is from, it was a statement that that Remy released through NESN. "It's my hope that I can do so in the spring," meaning this spring, and spring training starts in 6 or 7 weeks. And he raises the question, Shaughnessy, I thought quite well. He doesn't answer it. He raises the tough question, can he ever go back? And I assume most people, Emily Rooney, would say, of course. I mean, he didn't do it.
I know.
Of course he can. But the flip side is part of the allure of Jerry Remy is he's wildly funny, creative, when he and Don Arcillo are doing their thing. And can you be on television being that kind of persona when your son probably by then will have been convicted of this brutal murder?
You
what know, do you think?
One of the things about Jerry Remy, and I have enormous respect for him. I had him on the show a couple times right when he came back from that horrible bout with lung cancer, but worse, I think, than lung cancer was his depression. And
his meaning his own, not his kids. Yes,
depression.
His own, yeah.
And you know, he was very honest about that. It wouldn't surprise me if he was being affected that way again. I don't know that anything about that for sure. And I just think knowing that side of him, or seeing that side of him, I should say, that his conclusion will be that he cannot, as much as he would like to. My guess is that he will conclude that for himself and his fans, that he cannot, for all the reasons you just said. How do you be clever and jovial? How do you keep up a face while your son is marching to a trial come next September or October? And then is he going to take leave again just as the playoff season approaches? I think he's got to weigh all of these factors.
What do you think is going to – what he can and should
do? I have no idea. I know that he has got two other children, and those two other children we learned through the reports about Jared, the brother who's the son who allegedly murdered his girlfriend, the mother of his small child. They've had some difficulties, not anywhere near what the brother is involved in, but they've had some troubles and travails in their life. So you wonder whether he's going to – and the child is still in a limbo. We don't know where she is or who she's going to end up with. Are Jerry Remy and his wife Phoebe going to raise that child?
And I think her parents want the child, too.
And her parents want Jennifer the child,
Martell.
Too. Jennifer
yeah.
Martell. So I don't know.
Or maybe it's Jennifer's sister or something
like
that.
You know, I know how beloved Jerry Remy is. So you like to think that he can weather this, but – I have no idea.
You know, I tend to agree with Emily, but there is a horrible unfairness.
Yeah, terrible.
To this. I mean, he didn't do it. And while I'm sure there will be people, particularly when at trial time, because I know there were at the time of the arrest, that said, you know, why didn't he raise this kid better? Why? I don't know anything about how he was as a father, those sort of things. But that stuff is going to arise. But essentially, he's being potentially put out to pasture forever because of the horrible acts of his... son, but I tend to agree.
Well,
I just don't
happened.
See how he goes back in. It has happened?
Yeah, there are instances where people, you know, a family member and people have had to drop out of politics, and I don't know. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope I'm wrong, too, actually. Yeah. I just don't see how he – I mean, I just – when I read Dan Shaughnessy's terrific column this morning in the Globe, I tried imagining myself watching the game. And there's a rain delay or something,
yourself.
And then all of a sudden, I can't imagine. I just can't imagine.
You also
doing
think
it.
About people that have had other terrible tragedies. Bill Cosby's lost his son. John Travolta's lost his son. So
it's a little different.
It's different because they're not charged with a murder like this. But you still think, you know, comedians. I mean, Bill Cosby is a comedian. So how long after you lose a child, which no one is supposed to
endure.
I
went through that, too.
How long did you come back to work?
I had a really interesting thing happen to me, and this sounds so corny, and I'm not. But so it was in July 21st. Kirby died on July 24th. I did not come back. I was, you know, had been hosting Greater Boston. Then on Labor Day, Princess Diana was killed. I felt that the whole world, it sounds corny, knew how I felt about my husband and could relate to me in a way that I was going to start talking about Diana. So we came back and started doing Princess Diana's stories, and I felt very comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
And that's how I got back in. But I wasn't sure how I was just going to jump back on.
By the way, Emily, you're getting emails, Art and Christopher, among others, to say thank you for sharing the story about Kirby Perkins, who is a great reporter. I remember him well from WCVB and did great stuff with young kids.
And by the way, we should say NESN, since we mentioned them, which obviously is the station that broadcasts the game, says they welcome him back and like to have him.
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
They expect an imminent announcement, so we will.
It seems to me if he wants to do it, he can do it.
Absolutely. I think they would want him to.
Yeah. And that he'll probably, if he does it, he will make some reference, as you said, as you talked about the depression, he'll make some reference to this. And, you know, you never know if there may not even be a trial.
By the way, our friend Ed Ryan, former president of Barr, is Jared Remy's.
Although he
lawyer.
May declare that he was on steroids, he may use one of those defenses. Who knows?
And the district attorney,
which may be the problem.
The district attorney, Middlesex County, Marion Ryan, had a press conference, and they issued a report last week. They did an external report that showed that this young man should not have been let out. That was a mistake.
That was good of her, Marjorie.
Yeah,
well, except the fact that she needed that report to be able to conclude that there was a dangerousness issue with this guy is an issue. Let's talk about one other kind of passing that isn't quite as serious.
No.
You did what may be one of the final exit interviews with the soon-to-be former mayor come Monday, Tom Menino. What was your take on him?
First of all, he acted like he had all the time in the world. He wasn't in a rush. Who's very, very sweet and playful with everybody, my crew, his staff. But then as soon as the camera started rolling, I would have to use the word wistful. He sounded just wistful. And he was talking about power. I said to him, you know, former Secretary of State Dean Acheson once said that giving up power is like dying. I said, is it like that for you? And he takes a deep breath and he says, well, maybe not like dying. But then he started talking about everything that he was going to lose, you know, picking up the phone. And then he ended up by joking about driving his own car.
He's been practicing, right? Because he hasn't driven except the church.
But he bought a car. He bought a Lexus.
Is that true?
And that's a Lexus SUV. Yeah.
That's pretty great.
But I actually did a very, very lengthy interview with him because his book is coming out in September.
With Jack Beatty.
Jack Beatty. So we kind of touched on a lot of the things that are going to be in the book, a lot of the memorabilia in his office and meaningful characters in his life. So I went way back in his history. But I did ask him about some current things, you know, like the question that came up in the final debate that you two moderated between John Conley and Marty Walsh. I said, you know, Mayor, both of them said that Boston is still a racist town. Well, that practically sent him through the roof. I mean, he said that was wrong, and he went into a detailed explanation on why that was wrong, and it used to be true. It's not true now, and maybe it was appealing or pandering to a certain number of people in the city, but, you know, he really took exception to that. Really? What
do you think? Did you see the Globe editorial today? The Globe editorialized on the issue of Tomenino not going to the inauguration of Marty Walsh. He's having a quiet passing, I guess, of the torch ceremony that morning. Then he's leaving
town. The movers are actually coming to the office on Monday morning. He's going to be there, you know, packing up stuff to go to BU, taking stuff some.
Yeah, I wondered that because he's got an awful lot of stuff in that office, and his house in Hyde Park
is
small. And
did you know he collects clocks?
I did not know that.
87 different kinds of clocks in the office alone.
So where's he going to put the BU? Is where
some of the stuff he's just going to have to put in storage.
Yeah.
You know, before we get to your list,
what did the Globe say, by the way? Did the Globe say that
he should go?
He should go. Okay.
He should go. They mentioned the exception was Flynn because he was already in the Vatican, but they mentioned Hines.
I have no problem with him not going.
You know, neither do I. He's been there for 20 years.
You know, one thing I've admired about this because he's a pretty tough guy is, and I said this to you, through all of the interviews he's been doing, including with us and this possibly final one, at least obviously as mayor with you, Emily, is he has not tried to cover up the fact that he is either wistful or sad or melancholy or something. I was worried he was going to try to tough this thing out. It's no big deal. You say to yourself, and everybody's asking, what is he? I know he's got the BU thing. But it is, and as great as it is that he's going to pull together people with urban expertise on urban issues from around the country, and I think they will come, and hopefully he'll do some good things there. When you're as powerful as he was for two decades, to wake up when he gets back from wherever he's gone on vacation, it is really hard.
Well, I made the decision last March, and now I have to live with it.
It's a double whammy in many ways, because it wasn't so long ago that Mayor Menino was riding bikes and walking around at 5 o'clock in the morning and a very vital guy.
He does not look vital.
His health is compromised, obviously, and he's losing his job.
Well, when you say that, for whatever it's worth, and I don't know if it's true or not, when I had him on TV we had him here, I asked him about his health, and he said, and again, I'm just taking him in his word, other than his leg issue, he says he's as healthy as he's ever been. You may not agree, but at least that's what his representation is.
When you can't walk as well as you could, that's hard.
I know. I'm not at all poo-pooing that. In any case, we know that the primary reason you're here is for this. Here it is.
Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
Yeah, every time we play that before Emily's list starts, there's a different phrase. And today the one, it doesn't matter. It doesn't just spit out. Okay, what do you got today? I bet you they're snow related.
They are. But I just want to first by thanking all of Jim and Marjorie's listeners.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Do this.
So I said that one of the things I wanted for Christmas was a wine opener that worked. So not only did I get a wine opener that worked from several members on the staff right here at Boston Public Radio, several wine openers, but I got others in the mail. Now, I haven't had a time to test all of them yet. And then maybe people need to send me wine. So I mean, no, just kidding about that. but I will be getting back. I'm going to be doing a little testing with all the wine openers, and I'll get back to you.
By the way, this is true. Listeners sent her wine openers. Yes. And didn't you get Charlie cards, too, from
Charlie
people?
Oh, Charlie card. And I got lima beans, too, when I said I
couldn't
find
lima
any.
Beans. Okay, fine.
All right, yes.
What do you got?
Here we got. So, all right. I want an exact time and date when a snowstorm or a heavy rain became an event. It's going to be a rain event. It's going to be a snow event. How did it become an event?
You mean the language you're talking about? Yeah, that's a fine point, actually. Well, doesn't that make it more dramatic for media purposes?
But that's the whole thing. We've added all this new language into this. It used to be a snowstorm. rain.
Yeah.
Now it's an event.
Well, you're a media historian.
May I ask you something? Because you were at Channel 5 for many, many years. I'm getting all these emails. I believe that Bob Copeland, ex of Channel 5, was the only guy who correctly predicted the
Blizzard of
70. I'm getting all these complaints that it was Harvey Leonard or Bruce Schweigler.
They all like to say, I don't remember who it was, but I don't remember.
In any case, you don't like snow and rain events.
Right,
I'm with you on that.
And by any measure, this storm was a non-event. That's my second thing. This was a nothing. This was borderline a bust.
It was not nothing because it was light.
It's cold,
because it was light stuff. It is cold.
But it's not
cold.
Like a big blowing.
It is not.
No,
it was
and
not
you
an
have
event.
That heavy snow, which I hate.
Number three.
Yes.
There's only one or two days a year that I really, 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 really regret turning in my 2006 Subaru for my current beautiful TTRS Audi. And today was not one. And neither was yesterday. I'm still really glad I have the Audi. It's like, it's fine. It was fine.
It was fine?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell us Subaru was better in the snow.
This was fine. I wasn't not sorry I didn't have my Subaru.
But this is not a snow event, so she doesn't have to worry about it. Thank you. I picked up
on
it.
Now, this may be just delusional, but I swear after January 1st, I can start feeling the days get longer.
No, it's not delusional at all. There's a hopeful gene
definitely.
In people. I totally feel the same
way. I love the feeling of the days getting longer.
Yeah. I mean, just that little hopeful.
Yeah, December 22nd. Okay, the shortest day's gone now. It's
yeah,
gone
except
now.
For you really, at the solstice, it stays the exact same for about 4 or 5 days.
It does?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
It just kind of stays, and then it starts to move. All right, now this is kind of sentimental, but we go to the mountains every year for Christmas, and there's just nothing like Christmas in the mountains.
Which mountains?
The Adirondacks.
Oh, nice.
And, this way, actually, it's we have another house that's in the Helderbergs, and where they are. They're just south of the, north of the Catskills and south of the Adirondacks. Now, the only thing is, you got to keep the electricity going. Then it kind of takes, the whole thing is a bust. But
does that mean? What do you mean?
You lose your electricity in the mountains.
If you don't, I see. If you don't have it.
I was just saying, nothing beats it unless you lose the electricity.
So what do you say? Before you
have a generator?
We don't.
By the way, if there are people listening to the show, Emily would like a generator. If you could send generators to One Guest Street in Brighton, Massachusetts. So would you consider that a Christmas event at your house?
Yes, that was definitely an event.
Okay,
that's
fine.
That's wonderful,
All right, here's
actually.
Another thing. There was just like, there's always deer up there, but this time there were just like hundreds, like running in packs. And how come it is that you never see any bucks? It's always just the does.
How about that, Marjorie?
Why is that?
Why is that? Do you know?
That's a good question. Because the bucks are probably home watching the Patriots.
You never see a buck. You never see any deer with. Is it that they don't have the antlers at this time of year, or they're not out there
questions.
With the
women
know.
Are working and the men are relaxing. That would be my theory. I have no idea.
It's a great question, though.
All right, it's a great question.
Changing the subject here.
Okay.
Okay. If I were in charge of the Boston Celtics, I'm just saying this. I'm going to make that guy Kelly Olynyk. Is
the guy with long hair, the 7-footer?
He's got to cut it. And I'll tell you why. It's in the way. Versus all the guys with the dreadlocks, and theirs is very neatly braided. It's tight. It fits on it. This guy is constantly swishing the hair to the point like half the time his hand is on the ball, and the rest of the time it's on his hair. He's like moving it. It's not even in a braid.
Have you called Brad Stevens about this or not?
Yeah, can he do pigtails?
I know Wick better.
Does he have a headband? Does he
has
wears
a headband,
headband
but
thing.
It's not effective.
Yeah. Oh God, that would be very annoying. I don't like that. Yeah, you want your
I
hair.
I kind of like dreadlocks, by the way.
I do too.
Thank
yeah.
God
sexy.
You picked up
very
on that,
sexy.
By the way. The
very
Kelly
sexy.
Olynyk thing. I
very
mean,
sexy.
That's huge.
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
All right, finally, and I know Alan is going to agree with me on this.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
I saw Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
Alan
Leonardo
and I,
DiCaprio.
Who's running the board. We each could have cut an hour of that movie.
An hour. It was much too long.
Easily.
I
mean,
saw
I would
it as well.
You saw it too?
I would have been willing to sit in the edit booth with Martin Scorsese.
It was ridiculous. It just, Scorsese. He's like, God, it's going to keep going.
And the same,
going.
It was repetitive
oh,
in
totally.
The same scenes. And I know it was all about excess, but.
It was an excess in terms of no editing excess.
Yeah.
It was a good movie. I thought DiCaprio was really good.
Well, you know why that is? Because that guy's never been much of a director. Right?
Yeah, that was
you know, when you compare his other movies like The Raging Bull or Goodfellas.
By the way,
much better.
Beat the Press is on tape tonight because we are debuting an all new Greater Boston Beat the Press, new set, new gadgets, new gimmickry, and all new.
When's that? Monday?
Content. Monday.
Woo! Now, by the way, again,
at 7.
Send the generators right here
I could use one.
To WGBH. Have a great weekend. Happy New Year.
Emily
great
Rooney,
to see
thank
Emily.
You very
Thanks.
Much. Emily joins us every Friday for Open Mic, and you can see her every night at 7 on Greater Boston, even though tonight is going to be a repeat. It will still be fantastic. Okay, when we come back, we're supposed to have Boston Herald reporter Peter Gelsinas and Dave Wedge.
They're not coming.
Join
they're
us
showing.
For a news quiz. They have canceled out those little wusses.
You know why? Because Peter Gelsinas didn't want to lose his parking
lose
space
his parking
in
space
South Boston.
In South Boston, that's absolutely true. So instead, we're going to be joined by WGBH's own Adam Riley.
No.
Yes.
I love
and
that.
And Edgar B. Hurwicke III for our weekly news quiz. That's up next in 89.7 WGBH.
You've tuned in to Public Radio Remix, a collection of the best of public radio on Shuffle. It's from 89.7 WGBH.
WGBH programs exist because of you and WGBH's masterpiece, Changes in the Air, as three generations of the Crawleys have conflicting interests in the estate. Watch the highly anticipated premiere of Downton Abbey Season 4, Sunday at 9 on WGBH 2.
Music clips like this one come from local musicians in and around Boston. We call them hub bumpers, and we'd like to thank those local artists for sharing them with us.
Public Radio from Boston for New England. I'm Heather Goldstone, environmental science reporter, and you're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston. Online at WGBHnews.org. Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browder. She is Marjorie. And this is our weekly Friday news quiz. And as Marjorie said, we're not disappointed at all. But Peter Gelsinas from the Herald was supposed to be here. He is not here because apparently he couldn't find a refrigerator to put in his parking space to save it in South Boston. We have no idea what Dave Wedge's problem was. But in any case, we miss them. We hope to see them soon. In their stead are two of our favorite people. At least one of our favorite people. Another really decent guy, too, by the way. One of them is the guy behind the curiosity desk. That'd be Edgar B. Hurwicke III. Hi, Edgar.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Marjorie.
Hello.
So you had no time to prepare because you didn't know this was happening.
No. Oh, and I said, I want to go out on record right out of the gate and say I want a rematch already because there is not a week in the year that I pay less attention to the news than
I
this
week. I
hate
when people
right?
do that, so. By the way, I say they haven't read it. And joining you is another of our favorites. He would be Adam Riley of WGBH. Adam, nice to see you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for
Do you have an
for
excuse for
me.
Why you're not going to get any right either, or what's your deal?
No, I always follow the news.
You do.
That's our profession.
That one is, point to Adam. Adam's winning 1-0 already.
Okay.
Now, do you know, thank you for that. We appreciate that. Now, who would you like to ask questions of or to, Marjorie Egan?
I can ask Adam Riley because he's right across from me. So
why don't you do
it very
that?
Easy.
Let's get it
okay.
going.
Who outed himself as a Patriots fan when he posted this video on Facebook? Am I supposed to read this?
That's a wrong question. That's okay, though.
It's the wrong question?
Yeah. We start with the one from CNN. In this CNN, we just got the pages.
Oops, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Take 1 point away from Marjorie, please, if you can.
I think
Thank
you better start the quiz.
Okay, here's I will ask this of Edgar B. Hurwicke. Okay. Edgar, you ready?
Wait, so do I not get a
You don't get apparently you don't. Adam, thank you for coming to the quiz. We appreciate it.
I think I may have lost my quiz.
I'll help you in a minute, Marjorie.
I'm ready.
Okay. Here is the maybe Edgar, your hold. Turn that piece of paper over and hand that to Marjorie. I think you just wrote on the quiz. Thank you. Here, okay, fine. In this CNN field report, what are shoppers getting help with, Edgar? Here it is.
And you mentioned alcohol. You know, we're all familiar, at least I'm familiar with the term bartender. I learned a new word today. These are bud tenders here. They are helping customers decide which strain of to buy. There's different effects, different smells, different strains.
Okay, the question yet again, Edgar B. Hurwicke III, since there was a little confusion here in that CNN report, what are shoppers getting help with?
I believe they are getting help purchasing the right strain of the pot.
That is exactly correct. Marijuana became legal to sell it for recreational purposes up to an ounce in Colorado. And by the way, you've been advocating for years, Marjorie, with budget crises in states. They should be legalizing and taxing. Is that not correct?
They should absolutely. I think you could tax the hell out of it and make a lot of money. And marijuana, to me, you know, it's like alcohol. It's the same.
Can I ask you something? Was there a 7-second delay when I asked you that question? what was that?
You know what I'm causes looking, a delay in reaction?
I'm
what was that exactly?
I'm looking for page one. which I can't seem to find. By the way, why don't you ask the next question?
I'm not going to ask the next question, but isn't it obvious? You know, talk to the wave. Obviously, on the same day in November, Colorado did it, Washington did it. Its implementation date in Washington is a little bit further behind. This is going to happen ultimately in the bulk of the other 48 states. Is it not?
Well, it kind of looks that way, right? Unless the federal government decides to all of a sudden.
Very good point.
You know, because it is still illegal. So,
for federal reasons,
for federal reasons. So. But I mean, I don't see the Obama administration doing that. You know, maybe a subsequent, especially a Republican administration. I don't know.
But on a serious note, when you see not only the money we spend, but just the especially overseas, the lives right. lost here in drug wars, but lives lost overseas in drug wars, thousands and thousands of people. It's sort of crazy. If we didn't have the illegality, it's like a prohibition. You would not have these drug wars.
Are you pushing for total legalization, like cocaine,
heroin?
Yeah,
methamphetamines.
Well, I know that seems really crazy, but when I read, there's a great piece in the New Yorker this week. I refer everybody to it to read about the drug wars and what's going on in Colombia and the toll taken and the money we're spending. And to me, the money would be better spent on programs and prevention. And I refer people to that. And then tell me what you think after you read that story
about
the drug wars in Colombia.
Now, do I have to ask Adam a question, too, because you've lost the first page of the quiz,
no,
Marjorie?
My colleagues have very nicely brought in my question. So okay. Now I'm moving on to
Adam.
Adam.
Yes.
Listen to this news report and tell us which candidate they are describing.
Okay. Has announced his intention to run for re-election as mayor of Global audiences may wonder why would re-elect a mayor with a history of drug and alcohol abuse.
Everybody drinking, everybody's doing things, but they doesn't catch them, they doesn't have them. And they catch him and they make so much publicity.
He has a common touch with the people.
Okay, there you go. Speaking of drugs, what's the answer?
It can only be Rob Ford, the
that
mayor of Toronto.
That is
right?
Correct, Rob Ford. He's running for re-election.
Can't you, he's going to win, don't you? Don't you assume that the people
they
are?
They can't. No.
Why
really?
Would you? I'd say
I would
really.
Argue he's probably never been more popular than he is right now. Right?
Are you say? You really think so? Like in terms of voter approval?
Did you see him dancing with a choir at a church a week ago Sunday? The whole congregation was up
really?
Swaying with Rob Ford.
I not to. To take what could be just a funny, mirthful topic of conversation and get overly serious, but I'm a little troubled actually by the, you know, I've laughed at many Rob yeah. Ford stories, but I feel like it's a case where we've got someone who is basically having a protracted nervous
Amen.
Breakdown,
I
you
totally
know,
would.
In
no,
front of us,
right.
and everyone thinks it's hilarious, and sometimes it kind of is. But, I mean, this guy's life is out of control.
You know, one guy whose work I admire, even though if they call him by his first name anymore, I'm going to scream on CNN, Dr. Drew.
Yes.
Otherwise, I mean, the whole first name thing drives me nuts. He said what you said, and he talked about the fact the guy is close to having a total breakdown. And he said potentially could be close to death. And the fact that he's not getting help, but instead is continuing is just... In any case, okay, enough of that. It's tied 1-1 at the end of round one. That's Edgar B. Herrick III, who will take the next question, and Adam Riley, both of GBH fame. Ready for this, Edgar?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. The ball dropping in Times Square wasn't the only big thing happening in New York at the strike of midnight on New Year's Eve. What else was taking place? Here's an itty-bitty hint.
Here's the pen, Mr. If you would please sign the city clerk's book. Right here at the top.
Right here at the top.
Yes, please. And now may I have your $9 filing fee?
Okay, what other major event happened on midnight at New Year's Eve in New York City? What would that be, please, Edgar B. Herrick?
Wow, I actually do not know this.
You don't know?
The only other thing I can think of happening in New York is around Mayor de Blasio.
What would that be?
And that would be his inauguration, but I don't think that's what this is.
Judges, does he get points for that or not? Yes or no? Give him a half a point. He used the right person, wrong concept.
These are your colleagues here. I could be heard.
Now, Adam, what happened at midnight?
You know, I'm.
Go ahead, you can do it.
I'm kind of with Edgar on this one. I mean, what he officially became?
Well, I guess that's give him the point. No, that's right. Edgar, give Edgar the point. He was sworn in as mayor.
Wait, how did my answer generate a half a point?
You're taller than me.
It's
when a taller person says something with confidence, it tends to ring true.
Now, you know what I'm going to do, Adam, because I feel you got the short end of the stick here. I'm going to give you a half a point if you know a bonus question that I just came up with. What high school did New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio graduate from?
Cambridge Rindge and Latin.
Give him a half a point. Yes. Thank you very much. Did you know that, Edgar?
I did not know
then
that.
Give him a half point, too, no, for not knowing.
Honesty. Points for honesty.
Okay, Marjorie, you're up next.
Okay, this is the question I started out with before, and I always had it backwards. Here we go, Adam Riley. Who outed himself as a Patriots fan when he posted this video on Facebook?
I am a Patriots fan. I love New England, brother. If Brady gets tired or if anybody's knees wobble, their back cracks, or their liver quivers, brother, you can take one of the largest arms in the world. You can strap it to your hips, and you can score as many touchdowns as you want, brother.
You recognize that voice?
At first, I thought it was that Duck Dynasty guy, but then I thought... Hulk Hogan. So I'm going to go with Hulk Hogan.
You are correct.
The brother.
Amazing.
Hulk Hogan.
That is really good. I thought it was Rob Ford, actually. But it was might have been Rob Ford, too. I don't know. Why is Hulk Hogan a Patriots fan?
I don't
What's
know.
That about? Does anybody know?
Commitment to excellence.
No, I believe
lifelong.
He said that.
Is that really it? Chelsea said he used to wrestle in New England?
Here. Yeah, he used to wrestle in the New England area.
So he never wrestled
kind of
in Dallas or
well,
never
no,
wrestled
think,
in...
I mean, I don't know, that WWE training facility is in Connecticut, right? So there's a New England tradition of wrestling.
How
so,
long ago was it that Hulkamania was sort of cresting?
I would say that? that's the late mid, 80s, late, mid to late 80s.
Do we know what's happening with Duck Dynasty? Now,
he's back. A&E has forgiven him because it's the most popular reality series on cable. Well,
and there's such back a thing as freedom of speech in this country.
Well, that's a...
I'm just kidding.
Fine.
There, yeah.
Incidentally, Will also adds that he used to weightlift, not Will, but Hulk Hogan used to weight... Well, he may. Hulk Hogan used to weightlift in Somerville. I would assume
wow,
that the really? Curiosity Desk should have known that.
Should have been
Edgar.
All over that one.
You should. Now, you're ready, Edgar, for your next
Fail.
Question?
Yeah, let's bring it on.
Edgar Beharick III and Adam Riley are our contestants today. Now, someone landed a new job this week. Who was it?
Had a touchdown somewhere, but it won't be on the football field. For now, the former Pro QB and Heisman Trophy winner will be joining ESPN as a college football analyst for the SEC conference.
Okay, who got the new job this week? Who would that be, Edgar?
I believe that is Tim. I'm really excited to be here, Tebow.
Well, that is exactly correct. Did you know that, Marjorie?
I saw a picture of him somewhere this morning, and it said so. So that's the only reason I'm not.
So
a football.
You did know?
I did know.
You were not a football. That is
I'm
correct.
I'm not a football.
But he's not giving up his dream of being an NFL quarterback, right?
He
still thinks he can.
He still thinks he can be an NFL quarterback. Yeah. And
wait, are you talking about Rob
analyst.
Ford or are you
yes.
talking about Tim
yes.
Tebow? You're talking about Rob Tim Tebow.
Hulk Hogan, actually.
Okay, Marjorie.
Now, can we insert a political question here?
Sure.
We have a moment, don't we?
Yeah.
We were just talking to Emily Rooney about Mayor Menino, what he's going to do.
He's got
to
cut that hair. First thing he's got to do is brushing it back over his ears.
Yeah, I mean...
It's the retirement due.
Do you see him enjoying himself at BU and having a good time in his... In his retirement years, or do you see him as just a devastated guy? Well, what Edgar thinks too.
Well, devastated may be too strong a word. I don't think that's a fair
I would think it'd be awfully hard to go from, you know, being the sort of absolute power in Boston for two decades to just going cold turkey and being a professor. You know, I think it'd be a really tough adjustment, especially because mentally I think, you know, he could still do the job. He's not doing it for physical reasons. So I would guess he'd go a little stir crazy. I think he's graceful enough that he's not going to, you know, let on about that publicly. But I would think it'd be tough.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. I mean, I don't know that it's – I mean, obviously mayor is a different kind of position than a lot of positions. But I think anybody kind of going into retirement, you know, at a point when maybe they're not quite ready to – and as Adam says, I mean, I think mentally he still feels like he's as sharp as he ever was. It's a physical issue and the rigors of the job kind of issue. And I think I can't profess to even – kind of get my head around what it might be like to sort of come to the resignation that you're kind of moving to that phase of your life where you can't necessarily do the job you want to do.
Wait,
anymore.
Let me be clear again. Are you talking about Rob Ford or Tom Menino? I just
Hulk Hogan, who just can't wrestle the way he
used
to.
Here's an interesting question upon it. Is it going to be harder for Menino to watch Marty Walsh or Michael Bloomberg to watch Bill de Blasio? Because de Blasio's election was a rebuke to Bloomberg.
Totally right.
In a way
right.
that it's Walsh's was not to Menino. So,
That is a wonderful point.
Okay.
Did he get points for that or he just got a commendation?
We're ready for the next question.
We are ready for the next question.
Okay, Adam, what singer is at the center of this controversy?
Listen to the first couple seconds of new song, XO.
Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction.
If you don't recognize it, that was the voice of former NASA Public Affairs Officer Steve Nesbitt. The audio is from January 28, 1986, when the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded 73 seconds after takeoff. Former NASA employee Keith Cowing called on to apologize to the families of the Challenger crew, writing, "This choice of historic and solemn audio is inappropriate in the extreme."
You know who the singer is at the center of this controversy?
Not by honest means, if I have the right answer. I mean, I heard there was going to be a Beyonce question. I don't know if this is Beyonce. I also think I heard it.
This is one of the great admissions in the history of the quiz.
I think I heard a more honest guy.
Well,
there was also
sort of the phantom, you know, the lingering buh. You know, So could I reject the opportunity to answer this one if it is in fact Beyonce and ask for another question?
This is so honorable. Yeah. Give him 11 points just for that. Really,
yeah.
For the honesty, that is really unbelievable.
Wait, did she do it on purpose?
Well,
yes.
I don't know if she did it.
The songwriters.
Right. What are you hearing about this, Edgar?
Well,
she basically
put it on the songwriters and said, look, when they were putting this song together, it's a song about love and it's a song about sort of realizing what you have when you have it. And her statement was something along the lines of the songwriters were trying to honor the memory of the Challenger and remind people to remember the things that they have when they have them because you never know what's going to happen in this life. So that's sort of her side of it.
Smooth recovery.
That's her side of it. And then, you know, the NASA side of it is, you know, one of the former astronauts or one of the people who were formerly involved with NASA, you know, they said, you know, I kind of get where you're coming from, but to juxtapose that with you kind of gallivanting around Coney Island, like having fun, it just doesn't really work, which is what happens in the video. She's kind of on Coney Island. And so, you know, that's kind of the back and forth on that. Yeah.
I'm with NASA too. Where are you on that? Edgar B. Herwig III.
I'm kind of not on either side. I mean, I get it. I get where both sides are coming from. I mean, I don't know that that's the best choice of what to use right there. It might be just a little bit of thoughtlessness on their part, but I don't think there was like ill will. But it's just a poor choice.
You're with NASA.
Of audio. I'm with NASA. I'm with NASA.
Or Beyonce. Now
or
here
Beyonce.
Is the.
I'm with Rob Ford.
Here's
Where's
another
Rob
question
this?
For you. This would be Edgar B. Herwig III. What popular TV show's family now has its own line of Mossberg guns? Here's a few seconds from their gun commercial.
Leo, be free, and pursue happiness. You know what makes me happy, ladies and gentlemen? To blow a Mallard Drake's head smooth off.
Could have been me who said that, actually. So who said there's nothing that makes them happier to blow a Mallard Drake's head smooth off? And their family, now TV family, has a own line of Mossberg guns.
I would say this is the aforementioned Duck Dynasty family.
Yeah,
is that
correct? Yeah, this is unbelievable. They have partnered with Mossberg, listen to this, to create 9 new shotguns, 2 rifles, and a semi-automatic pistol, all in camouflage colors.
Have you ever seen a duck coming at you? I mean, that is scary stuff. You really need to be like, gunned up to the hilt to take down a mallard.
Do you know that 11.8 million people saw either their first or last episode from the last season? I mean, this is huge.
Jimmy, it's crazy. And, you know, I was, you know, down in Virginia, in central Virginia over Christmas, and I'm in the stores, and there are Duck Dynasty things flying off the shelf. I'm waiting in line at like a Target or whatever, and there's just the Duck Dynasty cups and mugs and T-shirts, and everybody's got them in their hands. It's crazy how popular this
stuff
is.
There is a little bit of a cultural divide, I guess.
Joanna Weiss has got an interesting column in the Globe. Yeah. That today, talking about the criticisms of it from both sides, and many people have never seen it. I've never seen it either.
I've never seen
and
it
her
myself.
Point was
what's interesting is these guys are really good businessmen,
yeah.
And you know they're cultivating an image here. I mean, they weren't bearded their whole lives, and that's there's a little bit of TV magic happening around this.
What did Joanna say about it, Margie?
Well, she said that people that are criticizing it so vehemently might watch it once before they criticize it so vehemently.
But are people criticizing the show or criticizing the dumb comments that the Duck Dynasty patrons
I hope it's the latter. I haven't seen the show either. It's the comments and the fact that A&E was pretty forgiving pretty quickly. Let's squeeze in one more question for Adam, and hopefully he didn't hear the answer upstairs, Marjorie. You got it?
I'll tell you if I did.
Okay, you ready? In this newscast, who's the reporter talking about?
A last-minute move by has blocked part of the president's health care law that would have forced some religiously affiliated organizations to provide health insurance that includes birth control. Is giving the government until Friday morning to respond to her decision.
That's Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Give them the points.
That's right. Do you have a bonus question here, Jim?
Yeah, I have a bonus question. Whoever gets this right wins. Who on New Year's Eve was doing rocket-like kick dancing at midnight in New York City as the ball dropped? Raise your hand if you know the answer.
Either. Elizabeth Warren.
No, that would be wrong. Does anybody know?
Representative of the Little Sisters of the Poor who had
that would also be wrong. Does anybody, Marjorie, do you know what the answer to that question is?
Who was that? Sotomayor.
Sotomayor, really? Yes. She was doing a kick dancing kind of beautiful thing.
Really?
So I get the points. What's the final score, judges? Do you know? Well, you got 4.5, Adam, because you got that half thing I got you. So it's 4.5 to 4. We're going to give you a half, Edgar, because we're very fond of you.
Well,
so it's a tie.
I appreciate that. All right.
Edgar B. Herwick III and Adam Reilly, our colleagues from GBH, sitting at the last minute for Peter Galzinis from The Herald and Dave Wedge. Thank you both. Great to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you guys for being here. And thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in Monday for a mayoral edition of BPR. Marty Walsh will be sworn in as mayor. Peter Kazis and political scientist Erin O'Brien will discuss the challenges of our new mayor and all the challenges he faces. Former Mayor Ray Flynn is going to be here as well for open mic. Our show is a production of WGBH, Boston Public Radio. Our team, Chelsea Mers, Will Roselip, Amanda McGowan, and Alan Mattis. Thank you guys very much. I am Marjorie Egan.
Oh, and since you asked, Marjorie, yes, I do have a piece in the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. And what is it on, did you say? The lack of accountability in high places in America. Is that what you're asking?
God, I didn't ask you, but I'm glad you told us, Jim. We'll all be racing out to buy it.
I hope you are. I am Jim Browdy.
I'm Marjorie Egan. Thanks again. See you Monday.